Good morning. Today's daf in Yavam is Yud Aleph. We're in Yud Amud Beis. We are towards the top of Yud Amud Beis. We're going to be starting immediately after the Braisa. It's four lines down. So Amalei Reish Lakish, Rav Yochanan, a conversation, dialogue between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish, coming off of a difficult Gemara yesterday, but the basic intent of the Gemara yesterday is very clear, just the details are slightly complicated. But the basics are very clear, and that is that Levi wanted to add another case in the Mishnah. And the Mishnah is 15, meaning capped at 15. And there are no more cases. At least that's the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda Anasi. But Levi felt that there was another case, in fact, that one could add into the Mishnah. And it was a contentious discussion between Levi and Rabbi Yehuda Anasi that takes us all the way back to Testament Aleph. You go back to Testament Aleph, and you see Levi says to Rabbi, so why did you stop at 15? Why not go to 16? And Rabbi's response to Levi, it seems like you don't have a brain in your skull, meaning why in the world would you think that you should be adding another case? And what was the other case that that Levi wanted to add? So he wanted to add the case of Anusas Aviv. So Anusas Aviv, Imo Anusas Aviv, meaning that who fell to you for Yibam? So it was your mother who was the conquest of your father. It was Anusas Aviv. Your father violated her and she fell to you for Yibam. Ah, your brother's allowed to marry her? Well, of course, assuming that it's not his mother, the answer is yes. So your brother is allowed to, you're allowed to marry her. But as we already learned together, that's subject to a machlokus amongst the Tanaim. And we know that our Mishnayos are going like the sheets of Rabbi Yehuda. What I'm doing right now is giving yesterday's daf in real short order. So we know that the Mishnayos are going like Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says that Anusas Aviv is a lav. So the Gemara says, okay, I know Anusas Aviv is a lav. But that's it, it's just a lav. And what do we know regarding a lav? If the nature of the prohibition between the two partners are in fact a lav, obviously the Torah says don't do it. But the kedushin is going to be tofes. There will be tvisas kedushin. The only time there won't be tvisas kedushin is if we're talking about nisar kares. But if we're talking about a lav, there's going to be tvisas kedushin. Now I know I said it really clearly and really flatly. It happens to be it's a machlokas tanaim. We're going to be seeing more about that later on. But right now, and I don't want to deluge with too much information. So right now, let's just simply say it. And that is, Anusas Aviv, according to Rav Yehuda, is a lav. And there's tvisas kedushin by a lav. And that means to say that a case could surface, another case could surface, where a woman is going to be an erva to you, but not to your brother, i.e. Imo Anusas Aviv. Okay, that's the case that Levi wanted to add to the Mishnah. So now on that, so we quoted a brisa yesterday, And the brisa that we quoted yesterday was Levi's brisa, meaning Levi, when introducing the cases in the Mishnah, so he did in fact act at a 16th case. In other words, he was opposed to the Shita of Rebbe. Now, what's Rebbe's defense? Rebbe's defense is actually really simple. And the Gemara said this yesterday. Rebbe said that I'd like to only discuss cases that don't involve an Isser in order to get to those cases. Meaning, every case in the Mishnah, every single one of them, all 15 of them, perfectly legitimate. Right? The first case, Bito. So is your brother allowed to marry your daughter? The answer is 100% yes. It's Heter Gamor. And all the other cases in the Mishnah are only going to be created by Heter. And I don't want to start getting into cases, says Rebbe, where you have to violate Yisurim in order to get there. Okay, that's that would be the Shita of Rebbe. Now that we're here, so now we are going to continue in yesterday's daf and finish up yesterday's daf and hopefully make some really good progress in today's daf. So I'm going to Reish Lakish le Rav Yochanan. So now the following discussion, and that is Levi Damar Di Nami Ketani. So according to the Shita of Levi, who's able to entertain the cases of E, meaning if we did this, meaning shouldn't have done it, but if we did it, meaning they're Lavim. So according to Levi, that we're entertaining cases of Lavim. So listening Acholutz Levim to Vechazav Vekicha Omeis Below Banim. So why not entertain the following case? Let's say you're a Cholutz, you're Yavama. Okay, in other words, what you were supposed to do. Now, when I say you're supposed to do, keep in mind, by the way, that, of course, the best thing to do is Yibam, but you did Chalitza. Okay, so fine, you did good. And now, after you did Chalitza, so you're a Chozer Mekadosher, you're a Mekadosher after having done Chalitza. Okay, now, obviously, the person over here is incredibly fickle. And obviously, what he should have done is he should have done Yibam with her to begin with. Okay, anyway. So now, what is the consequences of having trying to be a Mekadosh woman that he already did chalitza? So in a moment we're going to discuss it in more detail. So v'chaz v'kicha umeis b'labanim, and then the saga here doesn't end, and then he dies without any children. Okay, so it's a complicated case. So he did chalitza to a woman that he was supposed to do chalitza to. And then afterwards he was Mekadisha. And they got married. And then he died. And he died without children. So basically what's on the table right now is, were they married? Yes or no? So, well, she's going to be prohibited to all the other brothers. So the tzaras are going to be prohibited as well. So this is the question now that was posed from Reish Lakish to Rabbi Yochanan. So Amalei Lefishe Nebetzarat Tzara. So Rav Yochanan's response to Reish Lakish is, well, look, over here in this particular case that you just mapped out, so yeah, it is a case that could have been added to the Mishnah. And again, the case is involving an Isser, which is why, as far as Rebbe is concerned, Rebbe wouldn't even entertain the case. But we're not asking according to Rebbe, we're asking according to Levi, because Levi's ready to entertain cases even though they involve Isserim. So as far as why this case also wouldn't be added by Levi, he says, look, because it just doesn't follow the template of the Mishnah. What's the template of the Mishnah? Is that what happens is that not only is she going to be exempt from Yibam and Chalitza, so is the co-wife, and so is the co-wife of the co-wife. Tzara Tzara, that's a template of the Mishnah. In this particular case over here, there's not going to be a co-wife of a co-wife. Why? Because once he marries her, so now all the other brothers, or let's say better, and let's say clearer, when he first did chalitza to her, all the other brothers now are going to be prohibited to her and to all the other tzaras as well. Meaning there will not be a case where anyone else is going to be marrying any one of the other co-wives. You simply won't get a case of co-wife. It doesn't fit into the template of the Mishnah. So, b'lei malei. So the Gemara says, let's say, chai v'lav v'nhi v'chai v'lav v'nei chalitza v'yibam ninu. So what do you mean? Why didn't he say to them, meaning the Gemara just simply wants to know. As far as Rav Yochanan is concerned, just simply say that's a lav. And the chai v'lavin are subject to chalitza and yibum. So l'dvarv kamar le lididi. So what the Gemara now explains is that as far as Rav Yochanan is concerned, he was addressing Reish Lakish based on Reish Lakish's position. Lididi chai v'lavin ein v'chai v'lavin ne chalitza v'yibum ninu. As far as I'm concerned, everyone's a lav. But according to you, Reish Lakish, chai v'krisus ninu, everyone's a chai v'krisus, lefi sheina b'tzarat tzarah. And so since everyone's a chai v'krisus, so the issue now is that there is no co-wife of a co-wife. Okay, now, all this Gemara that we just did over here is exceptionally complicated, because quite frankly, what we don't know as of yet is we really don't know the machlokes between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish. We're about to learn it right now, meaning if I had a preference, so I would have first introduced Reish Lakish and Rav Yochanan, and then I would have gone back and gone over that dialogue of Reish Lakish and Rav Yochanan. What I'm going to encourage you to do is, after we go through Reish Lakish and Rav Yochanan, which we're going to do right now, then I'm not going to do it right now in the daf, but I encourage you to do it. Go back and then go over that dialogue again between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish, and it'll become a lot clearer. So Itmar, the Gemara says, now here we are. Here we're going to now introduce the discussion between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish. It happens to be a pretty fundamental discussion. And that is Acholos Levim to Vechaz V'Kitcha. So you did Chalitza. In other words, again, it's a Yibam opportunity. One of the brothers died childless, leaving now his wife for the mitzvah of either Yibam or Chalitza. And one of the brothers does Chalitza. And then afterwards, he's Mekadosher. Now again, the person's very fickle. The person is clearly indecisive. And first he said no, then he said yes. But right now, what becomes of that union? So Am Reish Lakish, who ain't chayav ala chalutza kares v'achin chayav ala chalutza kares, and ala tzara benu ben achin chayav ala tzara kares. So according to Shitas Reish Lakish, here now is how everything lines up. Vis-a-vis he. Now when I say he, I mean the brother that did chalitza, and her, the one who received chalitza. So vis-a-vis that particular relationship, so it is not in issa kares. What is it? It's a love. What love are we talking about? So as Rashi points out over here, the love that we're addressing, the love that we're discussing, is lo yivne, asher lo yivne, right? As far as the chalitza is concerned, so what did he opt not to do? He didn't build the house. Meaning that when you do yibum, when you opt to doing the mitzvah of yibum, so what you're doing is you're perpetuating, you're continuing the house of your brother. But when you do chalitza, asher lo yivne, you didn't build the house. But it's not just a descriptive way to describe chalitza. It also introduces us to a lav. It now becomes a negative prohibition. Once you opted not to build a house, so now you vis-a-vis her are now going to be prohibited to one another through a lav. Okay.
The other brothers too?
Great question. And now Reish Lakish says that only applies to him and her. But vis-a-vis any of the other brothers to her, so it's an Issacharis. Issacharis, why? Very simple. Because once Yibam is now off the table, because one of the brothers did Chalitza, so once Yibam is off the table, so what are we back to? We're back to Eshesach. Eshesach is now a Karis. And not only is that going to be true regarding the other brothers to her, it will be true by all the brothers to any of the other co-wives. All the other co-wives now, since Chalitza was done to one of the co-wives, so now vis-a-vis all the other co-wives, now Yibam is off the table. Once Yibam is taken off the table, so now we're back to Kares for all the other co-wives, including the brother that ended up doing Chalitza to that one co-wife. So according to Reish Lakish, if we have it straight, so that means to say that there's a lav vis-a-vis the Chalutz and the Chalutza, but vis-a-vis any other relationship, either the relationship between the other brothers and this Chalutza, or the relationship between all the brothers and all the other co-wives, it's going to be in a Sakari Sachitas Reish Lakish. Rav Yochanan Amar, let me go on. I will for sure take questions a little bit later, but let me just first introduce all the information. Rav Yochanan Amar Beinu Bein Achin Ein Chayav Al Chalutza Karis Velo Al Atzara Karis. Now, Shitas Rav Yochanan is fascinating. Rav Yochanan says that no one here in this picture, in this scene, is subject to Karis. My time at the Reish Lakish. The Gemara is going to go over the Svaras. So the Svar behind Reish Lakish is Amakrasha Lo Yivneh, Kemish Lo Banashuv Lo Yivneh. So we already pointed this out, but obviously I know because of the Gemara. So the Gemara says Asher Lo Yivneh. So that is the depiction of the relationship, the nature of the relationship, or let's say it even better, the nature of the prohibition of the relationship between the Chalos and the Chalutza. So Ihu Dekai Belo Yivneh, Valachavka Dekai Mekaima. So, and this only applies to the one who did Chalitza. Everybody else, everyone else is back to where we started. Where did we start? Well, we started where it was Eshesach. There was a Yibam opportunity. The Yibam opportunity is now no longer. Meaning once Chalitza is done, that's it. The trigger's been pulled. And now everyone's back to being Eshesach, which means an Issacharis. And Valadidahu Dekai Belo Yivneh. And as far as even the one who did Chalitza, that's only vis-a-vis he and the one who he gave Chalitza to. But any of the other co-wives, even regarding the chalutz, is considered an issacharis. In other words, we go back to the default of being an eshesach. That is all according to the sheet of Reish Lakish. Good. Now, Rav Yochanan, so now as far as Rav Yochanan is concerned, mi ikamidi, do we have anything? Dimi kari by high chalutz, vi by high chalutz, vi by lehai chalutz, vi by lehai chalutz. So for Rav Yochanan, he basically says the following. Number one, can you imagine where we are in the position, meaning immediately after the death of the brother, the original brother. Can you imagine now anybody can do Chalitza? Now the Gemara here focuses on Chalitza. I know we could have said Yibam as well, but once you do Yibam, so then they're married. And obviously with Chalitza, we're introducing the Isser of Asher Lo Yivneh. That's why we're here describing Chalitza. It's true also that anyone could also do Yibam. But any one of the brothers could have done Chalitza to any one of the co-wives. Okay. Which basically means now that we're in a position immediately after the death of the original brother where it would have been fair game for anyone to have done Chalitza. Which means now that from that moment going forward, who's now in a state of being Kares? At this point in time, nobody. And Vahashta Kayalav Kares? And now what are you going to do? You're going to now go back once one of the brothers does Chalitza. Everyone's going to go back now to becoming an Issar Kares? That's point number one of Rav Yochanan. And now we get to point number two of Rav Yochanan. And Ela Iyushlichusa da Achim Kavid, Iyushlichusa da Tzarka Avda. And here we get to a really fundamental point of Rav Yochanan. Really goes back to yesterday's daf, but we're going to just keep saying it again and again today. And that means that according to Rav Yochanan, what happens at the point of Chalitza? The person dies and he leaves multiple brothers and he also leaves multiple wives. Okay. How many people are doing Chalitza or Yibam? The answer, of course, is on the brother's side, one. And on the wife's side, only one. And that's it. It's only bias echad. Meaning, that is a tenet, that's a fundamental principle that I think I point out in the beginning of the Masechta, but if not, we'll say it right now. Only one couple can do the mitzvah of Yibam. That's it. However, the way Rav Yochanan sees it, it works like this. Of the one brother, whoever that one brother is, he's going to be doing Chalitza, he's not doing it just on behalf of himself, he's doing it on behalf of all the other brothers as well. Shlichus, he's an agent. And as for the one woman who is receiving Chalitza, she's not only doing it on her own, but she's doing it on behalf of all the other ones as well. Since there is a Zika for everybody, In other words, everybody that's involved right now is bound to one another. So that means to say that according to Rav Yochanan, the one who's doing it is doing it on behalf of, he's a proxy, and the one who's receiving it is receiving it on behalf of, she is a proxy for all the others. Shlichus. It's really interesting the way Rav Yochanan views it. Now, viewing it the way Rav Yochanan views it, so what do we therefore conclude? In other words, at the end of the day, even though obviously only one of the surviving brothers and only one of the widows is doing chalitza, doing and receiving chalitza, but the truth of the matter is, according to Rav Yochanan, everybody did it. Every one of the brothers performed chalitza. Every one of the co-wives received chalitza. Now what? Now, as far as the Yisurim are concerned, so now, who is falling under this category of Asher Lo Yivneh? Everybody. Everyone. All the brothers and all the co-wives. So the and this is the fundamental position of Rav Yochanan. Okay. So here we are now with a really basic machlokas between Reish Lakish and Rav Yochanan. What is happening at the point of Chalitza? Okay, there is, as far as now just Lamdus is concerned, just basic conceptual analysis over here. Is this also going to be true by Yibam as well? Is it when you're doing Yibam, you're doing it as a proxy for the brothers, and the one who is and the widow who is actually having the Yibam done to her, she's also doing it as proxy? Meaning, to what degree are we saying over here that this agency, the Shlichus, is working? There is much to uncover and unravel over here, but for our purposes right now, for the daf, we're just going to become familiar with the basic idea. Now, Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Now, in this machlokas between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish, Rav Yochanan says, here, let's take a look at a brisa together. You're going to see this brisa really follows my viewpoint, which is, so let's consider now the brisa, where you do chalitza to your vama, your sister-in-law. And afterwards, you're Mekadesher. So once again, this Bryce is dealing with our fickle individual who can't figure out whether he wants to not marry her or marry her. So first he decided not to marry her. And not only did he decide that, he did that via Chalitza. And then afterwards he said, you know what? I was wrong. I'm gonna now marry her as Mekadesher after having done Chalitza to her. Then that person dies. And now there are surviving brothers. So Tzricha Chalitza Menachin. So she needs a Chalitza from the brothers. Now Bishlam Alididida Minichai Velavininu Hainu Tzricha Chalitza Menachin. So Rav Yochanan says, my Shita right now, my Shita makes all the sense in the world. Because what happened? What happened was, is that he was Mekadesher. Is that Kedushin going to be Chal? Sure, it's a Lav. And even though he shouldn't have been Mekadesher, but again, by Al-Chai Velavin, by an Isser Lav, there is Tvisa's Kedushin. So now you understand that, although the Torah says not to marry her, but the Torah also sanctions and recognizes the marriage. Not sanctions, but recognizes the marriage. So therefore, when he dies, the other brothers have to do chalitza. It makes sense. But ela liditcha amai tzricha chalitza. But according to you, why is chalitza necessary? Because according to you, Reish Lakish, so it's true. The nature of the relationship between the chalutz and the chalutz is a lav. And it's true that when he marries her, so then it's going to, the Torah recognizes the marriage. That part's true. But according to you, Reish Lakish, what is the nature of the relationship between all the remaining brothers and her? It's an Isser Kares. It's an Isser Kares. So what do we know about Isser Kares? There's no mitzvah of Yibam, there's no mitzvah of Chalitza. So according to you, Reish Lakish, when all the other brothers now have an Isser Kares to her, so there shouldn't be Chalitza and there shouldn't be Yibam. Okay. So the Gemara says, okay, so Reish Lakish recognizes that's problematic, but he says, okay, but let's go on, let's read on in the Brisa, and let's see how the rest of the Brisa is going to stand to you. If any of the other brothers tried to be Mekadesher, so Ein La Alav Klom, it's insignificant. Now, now, according to you, Rav Yochanan, everyone's in the status of being a lav. Everyone's begeder lav. So according to you, Rav Yochanan, so why is it that the Bryce at the tail end says that if any of the other brothers attempt to be Mekadesher, it's not recognized. Now, for me, Reish Lakish, the second half of the Bryce is unbelievable. It's fantastic. Because why is it that it's not recognized? Because vis-a-vis all the other brothers, we're looking at Nisar Kares. Since we're looking at Nisar Kares, she's an Eishes Ach, so of course Kedushin's not going to be Toface. So the second half of the Brisa works out great. But according to you, Rav Yochanan, so why isn't there going to be a Tisus Kedushin for any of the other brothers? All the other brothers are going to be together Lav. And the Torah recognizes a Tisus Kedushin by an Isser Lav. Okay, so this all becomes problematic, meaning
The first half of the Braisa works out great for Rav Yochanan. The second half of the Braisa does not work out great for Rav Yochanan. Otherwise stated, it works out pretty well for Reish Lakish. So now we have a Braisa and we are stuck in the Braisa between the first and second half of the Braisa. Amar Rav Sheshes, the Gemara is going to give numerous solutions to how we're going to understand the Braisa. Number one, Rav Sheshes says, Seif us on the Rabbi Akiva. Damrein Kedushin Tovsin Bechai Velavin. So, Rav Sheshes says, I'll give you a solution to the Braisa. And that is that the second half of the Braisa is going like Shitas Rabbi Akiva. What is Shitas Rabbi Akiva? So we're going to see this again and again in the Masechta. Rabbi Akiva has a really interesting position that there is no Tvisas Kedushin by Chai Velavin. We don't accept Rabbi Akiva's position. Mind you, by the way, that according to Rabbi Akiva, what comes out? Aside from the fact that the marriage is not recognized. So by Chai Velavin, if a man and woman get married who are prohibited to each other through a lav, according to Rabbi Akiva, the Torah does not recognize the marriage. You know what that means? It means, people here have been through Seder Nashim. So it means that the children that they're going to produce are going to be mamzerim. So that means to say that according to Rabbi Akiva, there's going to be a proliferation of mamzerim. Anyway, that cheat is Rabbi Akiva. The author of the Braisa over here is Rabbi Akiva. Meaning, in defense of Rabbi Yochanan, the entire Braisa over here works out well for Rabbi Yochanan. The second half of the Braisa says that if any one of the other brothers does Kedushin with her, it is not regarded, it's simply going to be ignored. So that's going like Shitas Rabbi Akiva, which says that there's no Tfisas Kedushin by Chai V'Lavin. So V'listen, so the Gemara says, well, that's interesting. V'listen L'Divrei Rabbi Akiva in Lo Alav Klom. So why doesn't the Braisa make that point clear? Meaning, why is the Braisa speaking anonymously when, meanwhile, this is only the opinion of Rabbi Akiva, and the Chachamim don't agree with that opinion? So Kasha, so the Gemara says, yeah, you're right. So that's difficult. It would have been better and preferable if the Braisa would have said that this is the Shita of Rabbi Akiva, and it's difficult in terms of Rav Sheshes' defense. Okay, and with that, we're now on the very top of Yud Aleph Amud Aleph, otherwise known as today's Daf. So where do we stand right now? So we are, okay, it's a lot of information that was thrown to you in the last 20 minutes. And admittedly, it's a difficult daf. Not as difficult as yesterday's daf, but still, it's a difficult daf. So where do we stand right now? Where we stand at this point in the Gemara is that we have a very basic machlokas between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish vis-a-vis when one of the brothers is doing chalitza to any one of the co-wives. So what is happening over there? So between him and the co-wife, so there now is obviously it severed the Zika. In other words, it terminated the whole Yibum opportunity. And then in terms of Isurim, so we have a basic machlokes between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish. According to Shitas, let's start with Reish Lakish. I'll go in the order of the Gemara. So according to Shitas Reish Lakish, so now Reish Lakish will tell you that vis-a-vis he, the Yavam, or in this case, the Chalutz, and her, the Chalutza, so now the nature of the relationship between the two of them is that they're bound by a law of the Torah. Asher lo yivneh. The Torah says that he didn't build, he can no longer build. Right? Kevin shalabana shuv lo yibaneh. Good. So that means that the Torah prohibits them, the two of them, to marry one another through the Isser lav. That is him and her. But for any of the other brothers to her, it goes back, it reverts back to an Isser karus. Why? Because for many of the other brothers, now that the Yibum is over, and now it's Eishasach, and now we're going back to an Isser Karis. And even regarding the one who did Chalitza, for any of the other co-wives, they're just simply Eishasach, and therefore they go back to being a Isser Karis. That is Shitas Reish Lakish. Shitas Rav Yochanan is no. Rav Yochanan says that vis-a-vis everybody, it gets downgraded to a lav. The nature of the prohibition between him and her, and all the other brothers and all the other co-wives is going to be a lav. Why? So Rav Yochanan introduces us to this idea of shlichus. That when he is doing chalitza, he's not doing it only on his own behalf, but he's doing it on all the other brothers' behalf as well. Meaning everyone had an obligation to be involved in the mitzvah of Yibam. Now, I don't mean that. I said it, but I don't mean it. Meaning, again, only one couple can come out doing the mitzvah of Yibam. But who's a candidate? Every one of them is a candidate. There's only going to be one winner, if you will, but everyone's a candidate. Later in the Masechta and Daf Chaf Dalar Chafei, so we're going to talk about that really the oldest brother is going to be the one who's going to be given first rights of refusal. He's going to be the one who is going to be tasked with being first in line to do the mitzvah. Okay, but that's later on. But one second. So let's just first finish the review. So it comes down now that according to Rav Yochanan, he's acting as shlichus for the brothers. And when she's receiving chalitza, she's also doing so as shlichus for all the other co-wives as well. Therefore, according to Rav Yochanan, so now, once chalitza is done, everybody now gets downgraded to a lav. And then, after presenting that machlokes to Rav Yochanan Reish Lakish, the Gemara quotes a brisa. The brisa in the first half is supportive of Rav Yochanan. The brisa in the second half is super supportive of Reish Lakish. And right now we're torn between the two halves of the brisa. And so first we have given an answer, Rav Sheshet's answer, which the Gemara points out is not the strongest of answers. Yeah.
Why the Gemara find the need, excuse me, to say by four times?
Oh, because two is going on. If he could have done it, meaning that is any one of the brothers, or he could have done it, any of the other brothers. And then the second time it's talking about she receiving it.
Oh, so two.
In other words,
one each way.
Right, correct. Assuming that there's a minimum of two. Two brothers, two co-wives.
I got it.
In other words, if it's one, so then there's nothing to talk about.
I mean, it could have just said everybody, but...
Okay, correct. absolutely correct. Rav Ashi serve la Kareish Lakish, Omitaris la Karebi Shimon. Okay, so, we're now going to go over two other ways of how to solve for this problem, how to solve for the Braisa. So as far as Rav Ashi is concerned, so he's in agreement with Reish Lakish. So, which means to say that according to Reish Lakish, everybody's alive. So if everybody's alive, so now... Well, which part of the brisa is good? The part of the brisa that's good is the second half of the brisa. First half of the brisa. Sorry. Okay. Now I'm a little bit confused. Second half of the brisa. So Amad Echem and Ach Mikitche Ein La Alav Klum. Sorry. So for Reish Lakish, the second half of the brisa works out great because all the other brothers. Okay. Sorry. Now I'm here. I'm back. Okay, the second half of the brisa has all the other brothers being in Issur Kareis. So if any of the other brothers marry her, it's simply not recognized because it's an Issur Kareis. Meaning, Rav Ashi now is going to give a solution that doesn't have to involve Rabbi Akiva. Okay, and so Rav Ashi first holds like Reish Lakish, good. Umitaritz like Rabbi Shimon. Now, as far as the first half of the brisa is concerned, that's problematic. Because the first half of the brisa says, well, what happens now if the person dies? So chalitza is required from the brothers. Now, according to Reish Lakish, no. Chalitza is not required from the brothers. How is that going to work? Meaning, why should there be chalitza from the brothers? According to Reish Lakish, the brothers, kidekaime, go back to becoming an Issur Kareis. So there should be no chalitza. So for that, Rav Ashi's solution would be, I hold like Rabbi Shimon. Who is Rabbi Shimon? So we're going to keep seeing this again and again in our Masechta, and that is Rabbi Shimon and his definition of Eishes Achiv Shaloya Ba'olamov. Look at Rashi. Rashi, second line down. Umitaron Slay L'Reish L'Braisa Diktarit Sarah Chalitza Ba'achim Shenodu La'achar Chalitza V'Kedushin Shosheni. So what happened over here is that after the Chalitza and the Kedushin of the second one, now a new brother is introduced into the world. Now, Uche Rabbi Shimon Damar Yavam Lesof Nolad. Now, the sheet of Rabbi Shimon is the following, is that if you do Yibum, and then after Yibum is done, then a new brother is born, this does not fall under the category of Eishes Achiv Shelo Haya Ba'olamo. Meaning, I'm going to lay out three brothers over here, Reuven, Shimon, and Levi. Levi was born after Shimon did Yibum. According to Rabbi Shimon, this is not Eishes Achiv Shelo Haya Ba'olamo. Even though it's true, Levi and Reuven were not in the world together, this widow is no longer considered the widow of Reuven. She's now just simply considered, vis-a-vis Levi, she's only considered now the wife of Shimon. I know it's a little bit confusing, but again, you just say it over, think it over again and again, and that is the sheet of Rabbi Shimon. Comes out, Hilkach, Zika Sayin Nefila Lo Asur Le Aleh Dahai, Hol Cheshenola Kfar Kishazeh. Now, considering the fact that vis-a-vis Levi, this woman has no connection to Reuven, so that means to say that from Levi's standpoint, the only thing he has to regard is only her relationship to Shimon, and that's it. That's why Levi's going to have to do chalitza with her. Okay, now, I admittedly went over quickly, but it's a lot to contemplate and think about, but it works. Meaning, it is a solution of how to understand the Braisa, but of course, it only works if I subscribe to the sheet of Rabbi Shimon. Okay.
So what is Rav Shimon's case of
Shelo Yavam? Okay, fine. So the case for Rabbi Shimon is Nolad Lesof Yavam. Reuven dies, then Levi's born.
And then
got it. Okay, good. And now Ravina. Ravina Sava like Rav Yochanan. So as far as Ravina is concerned, Ravina holds like Rav Yochanan, meaning again, according to Rav Yochanan, Shlichus, which means that when
when two people are doing chalitza, everybody's doing chalitza. He's doing on behalf of all the brothers, and she's receiving on behalf of all the co-wives. So shlichus, that means everyone gets downgraded to a lav. So if everyone gets downgraded to the lav, so the first half of the brisa now works out fantastic, because now the only thing prohibiting them to her is only going to be a lav. Oh, so in other words, a lav, the Torah acknowledges that that is in fact considered a marriage. So even though the Torah says not to do it, but at the same time, the Torah acknowledges that it's a marriage. And that's why when this fickle brother, who first did chalitza, then did, and then was mekadesh her, and then died. So now the other brothers have to do chalitza. Correct. The other brothers have to do chalitza, because they're not prohibited to her via karis, only prohibited to her via lav. The first half of the brisa now works out great. We already made this point. I'm just setting it up because now what Rav Ashi is going to have to do is going to have to explain the second half of the brisa. Sorry, I said Rav Ashi. I meant Ravina. So Ravina savala k'Rav Yochanan mitaritz k'Rabbanan. So, and what Ravina is going to do is, as far as the second half of the brisa is concerned, he's going to say it like, it's like going like the shita of the Chachamim, meaning according to the Chachamim will argue on Rabbi Shimon, and according to the Chachamim now, when Levi is born, even though Levi is born after Shimon has already done Chalitza, but as far as the Chachamim is concerned, Levi is still connected to Reuven, which means that this is Eishes Achiv Shelo Hayaba Olamo. And that means what vis-a-vis Levi? This woman vis-a-vis Levi is now going to be Eishes Ach, meaning there's no mitzvah. And since there's no mitzvah, that's what the Bryce is describing over here. That's why in the second half of the brisa, the second half of the brisa says, well, what does the brother have to do? Nothing. Why? Because we're not talking about just any brother. We're talking about Eishes Achiv Shelo Hayaba Olamo. Okay. And now it works out. In other words, the brisa now works out according to Rav Yochanan. Everything I just said, the Gemara is going to spell it out. So oddly enough, these next lines of Gemara, I'm going to run through them because basically the Gemara is now just going to do all the work that we did together. Rav Ashi, Savala Kareish Lakish Matar, Savala Kareish Manacholos Levim Tovachaz Vekasha Tzricha Chalitza Min Achin, Man Achin Achin Hayeludin. We're talking about brothers who are born, Keman Karebi Shimon, holding like Rabbi Shimon. Amad Echad Min Anoldin Vekitcha In La Lav Klum. So Keman Kareish Lakish, and if the brothers who already were here in this world, if any one of them were to perform a Yibum after the death of Shimon, that second brother, so then it's nothing, because vis-a-vis the brothers who are here, it's going to be the Isser of Eishes Ach. Now, Ravina Savalak Rav Yochanan Amitar Slah Aliba de Rabbanan Acholos Levinto Vichas Vikitcha Tzricha Chalitza Min Ha'achim, Min Achin, Achin Hanoldin. We're talking about brothers who will be born, Keman K'Rav Yochanan, and that's holding like the Shita Rav Yochanan. Amar Echa Min Ha'yeludim Vikitcha In La'alav Klum. But if anyone who is going to be born, meaning that's going to fall under the category of Eishes Achiv Shelo Hayaba Olamo. And again, according to the Chachamim, even though he was born after Shimon already did, in this case, Chalitza, it doesn't matter. According to the Chachamim, the relationship of this woman vis-a-vis Levi is that it still goes back to the first brother, Rav Reuven. And therefore, she qualifies to him as Eishes Achiv Shelo Hayaba Olamo. Otherwise stated, an Isser Kares. And come on, Karabban, and that's going like the Shita of the Chachamim. Okay. I'm gonna punctuate with so simple. It's not so simple. It's really difficult. However, it all works. The Brisa now works out, but again, it works out. Either you have to take, there are two variables over here. And that is, where do you stand on the Rav Yochanan Reish Lakish front? And where do you stand on the Chachamim versus Rabbi Shimon front? So the way to make this price of work is if you subscribe to Rav Yochanan, you by definition are going to have to subscribe to the Shita Rabbi Shimon. And if you subscribe to Reish Lakish, you're going to have to subscribe to the Shita of the Chachamim. But once you take those two Shitas and put them together, you can make sense of the first and second half of the Brisa.
For either one, Rabbi Yochanan.
Right, correct. Okay, now I'm admitting, by the way, you talk about a difficult daf. So this is a difficult daf. It's going to get a little bit easier today, but only a little bit. Okay. okay, good. Next. Itmar. We are on Yud Alpha Med Alpha, and we're halfway down the Amud. Abal Yivim Tova Echa Mina Achim Al Tsarasa. So you do Yibum. Okay, good. So one of the surviving brothers does Yibum, exactly what he was supposed to do. Good for him. And then another one of the brothers said, you know what? I'd like one of the wives as well. And he does, I'm going to put this in quotes right now, Yibum on one of the other co-wives. Now, as we already pointed out, done. Meaning once Yibum is done by one of the brothers, so that's it. Now the mitzvah is over. Now the mitzvah is over. That means that all the other brothers are prohibited to all the other co-wives. That part's easy. The only thing now open for discussion is what kind of prohibition are we talking about? What's the nature of the prohibition? So, pliki ba Rav Acha v'Ravina charamar bekaris v'charamar be'asei. So machlokus between the Amorim, whether or not it's karis or whether it's an asei. So man damar bekaris kareish lakish, the one who says that's karis is holding like reish lakish, right? Meaning, because according to Reish Lakish, whoever participated in the original Yibum, meaning whichever brother and whichever co-wife participated in the original Yibum, so they did the mitzvah. Where is everyone else right now? Back to the original position. What's the original position? Eish Esach. Okay, fine. And meanwhile, according to the other Mandamer, the other Mandamer is going like Rav Yochanan. What did Rav Yochanan tell you? Rav Yochanan says that everyone's doing it via shlichus. So if everyone's doing it via shlichus, so now, what is the nature of the prohibition between any of the other brothers and the co-wives? So the prohibition is not going to be karis. In other words, we don't go back to Eish Esach, but rather, what do we go back to? We go back to an essay. The word essay over here is an interesting word, word choice, meaning seemingly it's a lav. Rashi writes over here, the essay, bais echad hu bone, the ein bone beis batim. So the way Rashi presents it is that, look, there's only one house that can be rebuilt. Okay, so we learn by inference that if it's only one house that can be built, means not two. This is what you call, Rashi says it very clearly, lava ba mechlal asei. So we are learning what not to do by the Torah telling us what to do. This falls under the category of a lava ba mechlal asei. We generally know a lava ba mechlal asei has the status of an asei. Meaning if anyone violates this particular prohibition, because the prohibition is not articulated as a prohibition, but only deduced from a positive commandment, so therefore it doesn't fall under this in regular categories of a lav, you're not going to get malchus for it, meaning it's wrong, you can't do it, but you're not going to get malchus for it, and in this particular case, also, certainly sounds like the kedushin is going to be tofes. Although, interestingly enough, the Gemara doesn't really address that. Okay. Mandamra bekaris kareish lakish, mandamra besekir Rav Yochanan. Okay. Next. Okay. A number of new topics are coming up between the rest of today's daf and tomorrow's daf. For the rest of today's daf, we get to talk about a sota. Now, to be clear, you say the word sota, so it can be confusing. In fact, I'll tell you how confusing it is. The Gemara is going to be a little bit confused, but the Gemara is going to clarify. I'm just going to do the clarification on the front end, and then that way we're all going to be a little bit clearer. I say sota, so what do you think? So you think in the Beis HaMikdash, I'll speak for myself. You think in the Beis HaMikdash, the woman who's drinking from the Mesota because she secluded herself with a man her husband told her not to seclude yourself with that man. Okay, and you're right. That is a Sota. However, Sota has a double meaning to it. A Sota is a reference to what we're going to call from this point going forward a suffix Sota, what I just described, meaning the only evidence that we have is that she secluded herself with a man. But nobody actually saw the act of intimacy between her and her, whoever the non-husband was. It just simply was an act of yichud. And there was also kinu. There was also a warning as well. But when all said and done, do we know that she was mezana? We don't know. We have a lot of evidence pointing in that direction. And yes, until she drinks from the mesota, she's prohibited to her husband. But we don't know definitively that she was mezana. So that's a suffix sota. Okay? But she has a status. Meaning a suffix sota is not just a suffix. She has a status now of being a sota. But just for purposes of clarification, we're going to call her now a suffix sota. And then there's a sota vaday. Sota vaday means that she committed adultery. There were witnesses to the effect. Now, normally, if there were witnesses to the effect, I say normally, like this is even when Beis Din was around, you know, they killed once every 70 years. But if there were witnesses to the effect, so then that would lead to a capital punishment. Adultery is a capital punishment, and if there's warning and she receives a warning and she accepts a warning upon herself and then she commits adultery immediately thereafter, so that is punishable by death. Chenik, if I remember correctly. Okay, so there is two types of sota. There's sota vada and there's sota suffik. So what we're going to be discussing right now is sota, and I'm going to tell you right in the front end, we're talking about sota vada. Okay, now, by a sota vada, so what's the halacha? The halacha is that she commits adultery. So again, if there was witnesses and warning, so that's it. Her life will be ended. She'll be executed. But if let's say there was no warning, right? The Edom didn't issue a warning, but there's evidence that she committed adultery. So now what? So now the husband has to divorce her. Meaning that in of itself, this is an interesting point. That in of itself does not terminate the marriage.
In other words, but he has to. He's forbidden to her, and so therefore, his obvious next move is going to be he's going to divorce her. Okay, huh? And she forfeits her ksuva 100%. Okay, so now, with all this stated, so now the man is married to two women, and one of them is a sota. And I say sota over here, we mean sota vaday. One of them is a sota, and the man dies. Okay, so now what's the yibum? What are my yibum options for the surviving brother? Good, we're discussing right now. So Amar of Yehuda Merav, Sarasota, Asura. So the sheet of Rav Yehuda Merav is that the co-wife of a sota is going to be Asur. Why? So Tumak Sivba, Ka'arayas. Because when the Torah gives a description of the sota, the Torah uses the word Tumah, and therefore she's equivalent to an Erva. Okay, equivalent. Meaning she's not one of the Arayas in the Torah, but she's equivalent to an Erva in the Torah. So if you look at Rashi over here, Tzara Sota Asura, Havinasri Beis Nashim, Zinsa Achas Tachta, V'yeshedim, Omeis Belobanim, Hiv Tzarasa Paturus Af Mina Chalitza. Okay, exactly as we set it up. Good. That part of the Rashi just makes it clear that we're all on the same page. The next part of the Rashi is what I wanted to read together. My Taima Tumaksibe Vinistara Vihi Nitma'a. Okay, so now admittedly, by the way, and I know this is a confusing part, because obviously we're quoting from the Psukim in Parshas Naso. Now the Psukim in Parshas Naso is talking about a woman who probably committed adultery or definitely committed adultery. The answer is yes. Right. So laden within the Psukim are both. Now the primary intent of the Psukim is describing a woman who probably committed adultery, meaning the woman who secluded herself with a man she was warned against. However, over here, as understood in this context, v'nistara v'hi nitma'a, so that's talking about someone who committed adultery. And she's like an erva. Why? Look at the next Rashi. D'chziv al tit'amu b'chol eila. Because we have the same word tuma as it describes arayas. Okay, so I understand we're taking tuma out of context. Tuma, obviously, purity and impurity. But even in the English word, you get the same connotation that when she commits adultery, she's impure. But as far as the halachic discussion is concerned, obviously tuma is referring to tuma for lack of better term, right? Sherets and zav and zava and mace and so forth and so on. But still, even in the context of the Torah, tuma also refers to defiling. And over here, she defiled. And we have the same terms used by sota as we have in the parsha of arayos. So it's ki arayos. She's equivalent to an erva. Now, if she's equivalent to an erva, so what does that make her co-wife? Correct, saras erva. The co-wife of an erva, and therefore she will be exempt from the mitzvah of yibum. Now, exempt, of course, means now that she's going to be prohibited, meaning the mitzvah has been stripped away, and therefore you can't do the mitzvah of yibum. Not for sure, not with the woman who was mezana. And by the way, probably that would be a good piece of advice as well, not to do yibum with her. But aside from that, she will be prohibited. The co-wife will be prohibited as well. So ka'arayis meisiv Rav Chista. So with that stated, so the Gemara now wants to know, this is an opinion that we're not seeing in the Mishnayos. Meaning, this is interesting, by the way, today and tomorrow we're going to be introducing to new co-wives of Erva equivalents. Okay, new term of the day. Okay, so we're going to be talking about co-wives of Erva equivalents that are not mentioned in the Mishnayos, and the Gemara now is going to litigate. Is he right? Meaning, do we have a Mishnah or a Braisa supporting this position? So, Meisav Rav Chista challenges Rabbi Shimon Amar Rabbi Yasso Chaletz Asameh Achav Sharishon Po Teretz Sarasa. So over here, this is a Mishnah that's coming up later in the Masechta, and this gets complicated. What happened over here later in the Masechta is the following. So Rachmanus, the woman's husband went away, and we don't know about his whereabouts. In other words, then we don't have any confirmation of death. There is one witness who came back and reported that he died. So this is what's called Eidus Isha. At the end of the Masechta, we're going to be talking about this in much greater detail. Now, she goes to the basin. She says to the basin, here's my story right now. I'm married, but my husband went away. One witness reported back that he died. So basin will now allow her to remarry, even though we don't have sufficient evidence under normal circumstances to allow for her to get remarried. But yet, a leniency for this woman, that even though it's only one witness, she can go ahead and she can remarry based on the testimony of the one witness. And as we'll learn later in the Masechta, the one witness doesn't even have to be a man. It could be a woman. We'll talk much more about this later in the Masechta. She remarries. And now the story turns even sadder.
in that her original husband comes back. Okay, so now she was mizana, but that's a difficult word. In other words, mizana means that she knows that she's married and she's with another man. Over here, she thought she was widowed, and so to use the word mizana over here is a really strong term, right? Shouldn't use that term, but when all said and done, she's a married woman who had relations with another man. Okay, so what now becomes of the union? So that we're going to learn later in the Masechta, Teitze Mizeh Umizeh, she has to get a divorce from both husbands. And we'll discuss much more of this later on.
Technically, was it a Tofes?
Okay, well, again, this is going to come up later on. We're interested right now in only one point, which is what the Gemara wants to extract. And that is, Rabbi Shimon Omer, Biaso Cheletza Samei Achiv Shel Rishon, Poteret Sarasa. So let's say that the first husband dies, and with surviving brothers. So now, either... Yeah, right, correct, the one that came back. So either the Bia or the Chalitza of the Achiv Shel Rishon, of the first husband, Poteres Sarasa, will excuse the co-wife. So what comes out over here is that we are basically looking at, now again, I'm going to use the terminology, even though it's not perfectly appropriate, we're looking at a woman who committed znus. And yet what the Bryce is telling us is that the co-wives are going to be excused, they're going to be relieved, which means now that there is a requirement of Yibum or Chalitza. Oh. And that would be problematic on Rav Yehuda Marav. So Am Lecha Rav, Amin Lecha Ana, Sota Daraisa V'Atam Atli Sota Darabanan. And so his defense is really simple. You can't, that's not Sota, meaning that's a woman who did, who was with another man. But that's not an act of adultery. That was a Beisdin sanctioned event. Now, there's so much to discuss regarding this particular scenario. I'm not discussing all the details because I happen to know that the end of the Masechta, we're going to be discussing this in much greater detail. But right now, it's sufficient to say the cases are not comparable. Udikari la, maikari la. And in fact, the cases are so not comparable. Like, why did you even think to introduce this scenario to our discussion? We're talking about a woman who committed znus. And you're bringing in that case over there, where she went to Basin with one witness and Basin said it was okay? Meaning, that's a different case. So Kosavar called the Takan Rabban and came to Arayis the Takan. Well, okay. I know it's a different case, but look, that over there, there's a lot of rabbinic legislation. And generally speaking, when we talk about rabbinic legislation, so what do? They patted themselves after Dini Torah. So basically, if they're advancing over there that there needs to be either Yibam or Chalitza in such a scenario, so now I would say that, how did they figure that out? They figured it out because they looked at what the Torah would have wanted. Oh, okay. So that's the Havamina. It's a pretty good Havamina. But the point of Rav Yehuda Marav is that still the cases are so far wildly different from one another, not to be compared. Meisav Rav Ashi Nechlin Sasti Mola Seisav Shasim Okidei Tuma Asurla Beisav Asurla Echol Betruma. So the first mission Sota. Now at this point in time, I hope everyone recognizes and realizes that what we're about to do is we're about to get confused. Okay, I'm prepping everybody. Right, we're about to get confused. Why? Because the first mission sota is talking about what kind of sota? A sota safek, not a sota vaday. We're talking about a sota vaday. Okay, so and I know by the way what I'm doing is I'm preparing us for the Gemara's answer because that's what the Gemara is going to answer. But right now, the first mission sota. So nichna sayimola says v'shasa makidei tuma. So she secludes herself with a man, and asur lebeis of asur lechol b'truma. She's not at that point as a sota suffic. She's prohibited to her husband. 1, 2, asur lechol b'truma. She's not allowed to eat truma. And 3, v'imeis. Now, what if the husband dies? Choletz defilo misyabemes. So you do chalitza, but no, you don't do yibum. Okay, and as far as why you don't do yibum, so the Gemara in the beginning of Sota goes on to discuss it in more detail. But anyway, chaletzas, right? Now, according to Rav, there should be no chalitza. According to Rav, isn't she a tuma? And doesn't that tuma basic make her an erva equivalent? So I'm lecha Rav, I mean lecha ana sota vade v'amart liat sota safek. So what he says is, wow. You know, you just got confused. Meaning, I'm talking about a sota vada. I'm talking about where witnesses actually saw the act of intimacy with her and another man. That's sota vada. And you're bringing me the case of sota safek? That's different. And the Gemara says, and why is it different? Umayshan sota vada maitama. Let's skip the words maitama. Umayshan sota vada mishum dechsiv ba tuma. So sota safek na mitumak sivbe.
So the Gemara says, well, you know, the word tumah is used to describe both our suffik vadai, our sota vadai, and our sota suffik. And now, how do I know this? The Tanya, because of the following brisa: Rabbi Yosef ben Kippur Omer Mishum Rabbi Elazar Hamachzik Grushaso Min Anisuin Asura Min Aeris Muteris. So let's say you're Machzik Grushaso. Now I know we're going to go off topic over here. We're going to go a little bit longer today because I do want to get. We're going to go a little bit longer today just because I do want to catch up a little bit more. So anyway, so the Machzik Grushaso. So let's just get a crash course to Machzik Grushaso. A man divorces a woman. Is he allowed to remarry her? The answer is 100% yes. He can remarry her. In fact, it's happened, right? In our very own community. It happens. Good. So they try again. And here's a big but. And that is that if in the interim she marries another man, meaning the first husband divorces her, and now she marries another man, so now, and she divorces that second man, or she becomes widow from that second man, she cannot go back to her first husband. And this is now not only an Isser in the Torah has really strong words to describe such an individual or such a scenario. The Torah describes that as a toeva. It's an abomination. Torah uses that term very infrequently. Torah is really unhappy with that kind of conduct and that kind of practice. I've quoted this Sforno in the past. It's such a poignant Sforno. The Sforno there says, why does the Torah use such graphic description to describe such a scenario? He says, because you know what it is? It's legalized adultery. In other words, it's basically, it's using the rules of the Torah to engage in the practice of adultery. So basically what you're doing is you're circumventing in order to practice adultery. Okay. Anyway, so now with that in mind, so we're going over now the details of Machzir Grushaso. So I'll start again. Rabbi Yossi ben Kippur Amen Mishum Rabbi Lazar HaMachzir Grushaso Min HaNesu'in Asura Min HaIrus HaMutaris. So let's say she went through Nesu'in, first and second stage of marriage, with another man. So now she is Asur. But if she only went through Erusin with another man, she will be Mutter. Now, Mishum Shenemar Acher Asher Hut Ama, because she only was defiled, meaning only if she was with another man, then and only then do we have the Isra Machzir Grushaso. But if she was not with another man, but she was restless with another man, yeah, but that's not with. Erison does not involve relations. Now, I know there are three ways, there are three ways to be Mekadosh a woman, and one of them is Bia, but Bia is pretty much taken off the table. The Gemara in the beginning of Kedushin, Mirtz Hashem, we're going to see it shortly enough, so Bia has pretty much been taken off the table. So anyway, so it's just Erusin, it's not Nisuin, she was not with another man. Okay. V'chachamim omrim, now this is where we have to, we always have to focus, but now pay careful attention over here. Achazu v'achazu asura. So now, both of them are going to be asur. Meaning whether or not this woman either was ma'aris and nasa to another man, or even if she was just ma'aris to another man, muresis to another man, she now falls under this category of machzik grushaso. Elamani mekayim acharei hutama. So what do we do now with the words acharei hutama l'rabba sota shenistara? So we're talking about a sota. So I know this is really strange. Meaning according to the chachamim, the phrase that's used in the Parsha of Machzik Grushaso, so what we're going to do is that we're going to pull it out of its context. I know, it's strange, but that's according to the Chachamim. And when we say Sota Shenistara, what are we describing over here? My Nistara Nivala. It means that she had relations with another man. Vamai Karele Nistara, Lishna Malia Nakat. So, the Mishnah is just using a cleaner language, but it means that she was actually with another man. So, Nivala Toma Behejik Sivba, Vinistra Vihi Nitma'a. So the Gemara says, wait 1 second. I'm pulling the expression out of the Parsha of Machzik Grushaso, which is, by the way, tucked away in Dvarim, in Parsha's Kiseitse. So I'm pulling the phrase out of there to describe a Sota, meanwhile, go to the Psukim in Sota, and you're going to see the Torah uses the words Toma over there. So what are you doing? You're pulling the phrase out of the parsha to describe a sota, and meanwhile the Torah already describes her as being a tmeya. So let's make him a labalav. So basically the Torah says you're right, but it does have a halachic ramification because now not only is the Torah giving a description of her being tamei, but also giving her a lav as well, meaning that there will be a bona fide negative prohibition for the husband to be with his wife after she committed adultery. Rav Yosef ben Kippur, la besota leisle. So and according to Rav Yosef ben Kippur, so as far as the sota is concerned, there's no lav, meaning that they're prohibited, but there's no lav. Ve'afilu zanai nami. So, My taima, havaya v'ishus ksivba. And the, because you need havaya, you need ishus. Meaning that according to Rav Yosef and Kippur, so if she is with another man after she divorced her first husband, so then she is not prohibited with this prohibition of Machzik Grushaso. You need havaya, you need ishus. You need her to go through the first stage of marriage and the second stage of marriage. Okay, what comes out over here, is that according to the Shita of the Chachamim, the Torah's description of Tumah only applies to a Sota Vadai, not to a Sota Safek. Okay? And again, I know all this becomes a little bit confusing because you open up the Parsha of Sota in the Torah in Parsha of Snoso, it sounds like it's talking about a Sota Safek, and meanwhile, the words Asher Hutama is only describing a Sota Vadai, not a Sota Safek. Okay. Comes out the following over here. Okay, let's just, here's where we're going to pause, and tomorrow we'll pick it up at the midpoint of the Amud, but here's where it comes out. It comes out now that in the second half of today's daf, we're introduced to a erva equivalent. We're going to be discussing a bunch more tomorrow as well. What is the erva equivalent? The erva equivalent that we're discussing today is Saras Sota, but here when we're talking about Sota, we're talking about Sota Vadai, and in such, Rav Yehuda Merav is of the position that if the wife committed adultery, and not adultery in that she secluded herself with another man, but there were witnesses who saw that she was with another man, a Sota Vadai, so now she is erva equivalent, which means now that in the event that he died without divorcing her, so now you're going to have two, assuming that there are two wives that are remaining, not only is the Sota going to be exempt and excused from the mitzvah of Yibum and Chalitza, because she is an Erva equivalent, but the co-wife as well, she is now going to be Saras Erva, or in this case, Sara Ki Erva. She is, in other words, the Sota herself is an Erva equivalent, and that Sara is now going to be the co-wife of an Erva. And according to the Shita of Yudah Merav, such a woman is going to be exempt, excused from the mitzvah of Yibam Chalitza, which means then, of course, that presumably goes back to being a Shazach. Okay, well, actually we'll talk a little bit more about that in tomorrow's daf. But anyway, that's the Chiddush of Rav Yehuda Merav. Okay, and that really took up most of today's daf. The beginning of today's daf was very complicated. The beginning of today's daf, we finished up yesterday's discussion regarding the machlokes between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish, vis-a-vis how to look at the act of Chalitza. Is it a one-on-one, or is everybody a proxy for everybody? According to Reish Lakish, it's one-on-one. According to Rav Yochanan, it's shlichus. And that now is going to inform us in terms of the nature of the prohibition vis-a-vis the other brothers and the other co-wives. Okay.